from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mandata! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point, Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Owen Valentine, Ben Shulman here talking Syracuse basketball in what was supposed to be a simple five-game stretch. The last time we were on the pod, we were previewing Pittsburgh, and they're playing Pittsburgh two out of their next five games at that point, and we both came on here and said this is a winnable stretch because the back half of this ACC schedule is very tough, naturally, and that's sort of where Syracuse's ACC schedules have been in the last couple of years. But we said this is a five-game stretch. You said they had to win all five. I said they had to go 4-1, a very winnable five-game stretch, albeit a little bit different now than it was when we first talked about it. But at the same time, I would almost argue that it's the same just with the one game switched. It was initially supposed to be Pittsburgh, Georgetown, Clemson, Pittsburgh, Miami. It got switched up because of a Clemson postponement. And you know what? North Carolina's free. Syracuse is free. Let's reschedule that game that was supposed to happen a little bit earlier. Let's get that game in and get that matchup underway. So now it goes Pittsburgh, Georgetown, North Carolina, Pittsburgh, Miami. And, you know, you could argue, and I think most people would argue, that Clemson, North Carolina, you could sort of say is the same game. And you could even, you know, you throw this one out there. They now have lost two of their three in this stretch. And North Carolina is an easier game than Clemson right now. So not a good look for Syracuse. They dropped to 1-2 in this stretch with Pittsburgh and Miami left on the schedule. And Ben, we were wrong, which is bad enough, but it's even worse for Syracuse basketball to have to climb themselves out of this hole.
It's a nightmare. I think it's an absolute nightmare to start this stretch 1-2. And, you know, I said 5-0, you said 4-1. And I thought 5-0 was a little bit of a hot take. But I think when you throw North Carolina in instead of Clemson, I think Clemson's a better team than UNC is. I think it's really disappointing to come out of these three games with two losses. The first one and the one we'll inevitably talk about because it's the opponent coming up in just a few days is Pittsburgh, and that's a brutal loss. You can't blow a double-digit lead in the second half against the team missing its best player and several other key contributors. You just can't do it, and that's exactly what Syracuse did. I think as we start to break it down, we'll get into some of the specifics why, like inside play, but on a macro level, it's killer to be 1-2 right now. You know, even if SU beats Pittsburgh in Miami by 30 points in the next two games, it's not a successful five-game stretch by any stretch of the imagination.
You know, you remember, and for those of you who missed it or want to refresh, because Syracuse's next game is against Pittsburgh, and fortunately for Syracuse, I mean, Pittsburgh hasn't played since the last time these two teams squared off. So everything that was mentioned in our last episode, you can go back and check that out. We talked with Craig Meyer, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, who gave a lot of the insight into what Pittsburgh is at the moment. And I just sort of remember him talking about, you know, you've got no Justin Champagne. He's out for 6 to 8 weeks with an injury. You've got 3 to 4 players out, a coach out because of COVID issues. Everything that he was saying just sort of contributes to the idea that Syracuse was supposed to be the clear-cut favorite, and they were the clear-cut favorite. And for the first 20 minutes of that basketball game, when Syracuse and Pitt were playing in the Dome, it looked like that was the case. It looked like Syracuse came out and was the better team. It looked like Pitt was really disheveled. And they were both coming off of long quarantines, both playing their first games in 14 or more days. And for the first half, Syracuse looked great. It looked like they had figured things out and were the better team. And it sort of taken that, we've already done this quarantine thing and we know what we did wrong the first time. We know what we need to do this time. It looked like everything was great. And then the second half, things just fell apart. They blow an 18-point lead. Pitt gets the win. It's something that Syracuse has to keep an eye out for. Boeheim has mentioned it multiple times in post-game press conferences. They've played a lot of close games. And, you know, that's valuable in terms of the experience and playing those close games. But at the same time, they've played a lot of close games in games that shouldn't have been close games. That Bryant game, I know Bryant came out and played well and Boeheim had all those takes. That should not have really been a close game. You know, you look at some of the other games. Northeastern was close for whatever reason. Why was that a close game? Buffalo, you're supposed to blow out. And I know you end up miraculously covering 10.5 in overtime, but you should have lost that basketball game. Pitt, you should have won. Georgetown is a close game. North Carolina is a close game. All of these games are close. They shouldn't be close games. That's your issue. I know it's valuable in terms of gaining that experience, but put your foot on their throat and kill them for the love of God. Because when you've got a double-digit lead, keep the double-digit lead. That's how you become a good basketball team, not by letting teams back into a game and then inevitably pulling out a miraculous victory. You need to kill them from the start. To be a little bit graphic here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast, just let them have it, because that is what's going to win you games down the stretch in the ACC, is that grit and that tenacity, not the ability to have been in a couple of close games against inferior opponents.
Yeah, the close games is really spectacular. I mean, there might not be another team in the country that can play tight with schools like Bryant and Northeastern and blow out a school like Boston College and then have a tight loss against Pittsburgh. I mean, Syracuse's scores this year are absolutely all over the place, but you bring up not being able to put their foot on the gas and finish it. Syracuse just hasn't been able to close this season, and Pittsburgh was the worst example. Offensively, Syracuse was very mediocre, really, against Pittsburgh the entire game. Defensively, it was an incredible first half and a pretty horrific second half. Pittsburgh shoots just over 21% in the first half. They shoot 46% in the second half. And the big one, the one that really hurts, is Pitt only made 1 3 on 12 attempts in the first half for 8%. But in the second, they shot 37.5, 6 for 16. Syracuse is just sagging back in that second half and getting comfortable with a lead like Pittsburgh. UNC's one thing. The game was back and forth the whole time. This Pitt game was wrapped up and over. I mean, it was done. Syracuse had it. And then all of a sudden, it's back in.
It was just like, I don't really understand how that comes to be. And obviously, you look at the metrics and the numbers, and that's sort of where we'll progress in this discussion, because I don't think we can get this episode out. I don't think it would be okay for us to get this episode out without a major focus on the sort of big man down low situation. And you started to see it in this Pitt game when you look at the rebounding margin. Pitt has 49 rebounds. Syracuse has 33. That's a minus 16 margin in the rebounding category. Things were a little bit better against Georgetown, but this North Carolina game, and I know it's a big UNC team, and I know they've got big guys in Garrison Brooks, Armando Bacot, De'Ron Sharp. They've got the size. They've got a ton of size, but you get out rebounded again, 48 to 31. That's a plus 17 margin. 17-16, that's a 33 rebound margin in these two games. That's awful. You've got to be able to figure things out. And as Boeheim mentioned in his press conference, it's not really going to improve immediately, because Barama Sidibe is still experiencing some complications with the knee. And for whatever reason, I think, you know, the conversation has sort of been regarding this with Barama. You sort of just have to chalk him in as out until you actually see him hit the scorer's table or enter the starting five. He's just got to be out in terms of mentality, because, it seems like this is what was supposed to be a relatively simple procedure, a relatively quick recovery, 3 to 4 weeks start to finish. And we are past week four. We are past week five. It's been a lot of time for Barama. And so, you know, you sort of just have to get to this point and find the next man up. And right now it's Marek, and from the looks of North Carolina, Jesse, they're trying to figure things out with. But there is a decent drop-off between, you know, Barama Sidibe playing the five and then Marek Dolezal playing the five, and then another drop-off and Jesse Edwards playing the five. And that's just sort of the way it is right now. Syracuse has to figure out the rebounding margins, and they've got to be able to narrow those gaps, because you can directly correlate losses in almost every game. And you can pretty much, you know, a lot of games, you can simply look at the rebounding margins to figure out who wins a basketball game. And if you can't narrow those gaps, then you're not even going to be competitive going up against, you know, upper echelon of the ACC, albeit you were able to give North Carolina a little bit of a run because of some nice offensive spurts.
I want to quickly touch on Barama before I get to rebounding margin. The Barama stuff is very concerning. I mean, I'm not going to speculate anything because I don't know anything. I'm only going to talk about what I've seen and what I've heard. But WAER alumni, our friends, Tyler Aki and Tim Leonard, tweeted out from the Syracuse Locked On podcast that the way that Jim Boeheim is responding to questions about Barama and the lack of information is incredibly concerning on his ability to come back. Mike Waters tried to ask Boeheim about Barama's return after the next game, and he essentially just cut him off and said, he's not playing. So I don't know if either of us can expect Barama to be back anytime soon, because the messaging just isn't there that would suggest that. And then going to the rebounding margin, Syracuse is never, in my opinion, going to be a team that wins rebounding margins consistently. And I don't think they need to. That's not necessarily how the team works. The 2-3 zone allows long rebounds. Long rebounds create offensive rebounds. It just happens that way. They're more counting on you to shoot a poor percentage from the field. But these rebounding margins, as you mentioned, are just ludicrous, especially against Pitt. UNC has big players. You said Brooks, Baycott. Their bread and butter is inside play. SU's bread and butter is outside play. So that's something that I think to a certain extent is unavoidable. Would Boeheim like them to do better than negative 17 in the margin? For sure. But Pittsburgh, they don't have more size than Syracuse. They don't have their leading rebounder at 13 rebounds per game and Justin Champagny, and yet they're able to just dominate Syracuse on the glass and then turn it into points. Points in the paint for Pitt, 28. For Syracuse, 12. That's just not going to work. You can't allow a team to score so easily inside, especially when you're having a ton of trouble getting to the basket and scoring yourself. And it really all culminates in the go-ahead tip-in by Audis Tony.
Panthers down by one. Johnson straight away. He's got 10 points thus far. Johnson wraps around the screen. Near wing, kick out three. Horton, it's on the way. Off the backside of the iron. Rebound tipped up and in. Audis Tony with 8.2 to go.
6'6 guy, which 6'6 isn't small, but 6'6 isn't that big, leaps over a Syracuse defender and tips it in to put Pitt up 1 point after SU forced a miss. And it's just, it's impossible to win when you give so many second chance opportunities. You can give some, but you can't give so many. And right now Syracuse is letting teams get a lot of second chances at the basket.
You mentioned it. The 2-3 naturally sort of allows the long rebounds. It's open and susceptible to long rebounds and a couple of offensive rebounds throughout a game. It has simply been unacceptable what Syracuse has done at this level and on the offensive glass. Their defensive rebounding really, really needs to improve. And that is beyond the, you know, the 2-3 allows this to happen. It needs to make some big changes and figure some things out. And whether that is just giving Jesse Edwards more minutes because he is the size and he has some length and a little bit to offer, I don't know if that's the situation, but I mean, you look at the Pitt game and it's 21 second chance points. You look at the Carolina game and it's 24 second chance points. And for Carolina had more offensive rebounds than Syracuse had defensive rebounds. Let me repeat that. North Carolina on the offensive side of the ball had more offensive rebounds than Syracuse had defensive rebounds. When Syracuse is set up in the 2-3 zone, Carolina out-rebounded them 24-21. That is never, ever going to win you a basketball game. And the fact that they were competitive given that number is, it's a positive in its own that the offense was sort of picking things up and picking up enough slack. But you cannot tell me that that is the best performance you can offer. Marek Dolezal, one rebound for Marek Dolezal against North Carolina. Come on. That is something that you need to fix. You play 35 minutes at the five at a Division I level, and you rack up one rebound. That is where you lost this game. Marek Dolezal looked complacent. He didn't really want to step things up defensively. We were texting back and forth during this game. What's good with Marek? What's going on? It seemed like he was sort of playing the whole game in foul trouble. Although he gets into early foul trouble with his two fouls, but he comes back in the second half and there's 8 minutes left. He's got two fouls and he's just sort of staying there playing rec league defense, hands straight up, can't move. You're planting, you're like a big tree just standing in the forest, hands straight up. And that was all Marek could offer. He was not aggressive. And it was something that really allowed Carolina to dominate the offensive glass. And I don't necessarily know what the switches are. I think it's got to be a group effort, obviously. You've got to have Marek be able to get some more positioning and some better positioning. It comes down to Allen and Quincy. I mean, they combined for 18 rebounds. I think they did their job. I think they did what they needed to do. But with one rebound from Marek, there has to be a change down at the five spot if they're going to be playing. And I know this is a Carolina game that is sort of the top tier in terms of bigs that you're going to play all year, with the fact that they have, what, six guys above 6'10". They're a big team, and not every game is going to be like that, but there are improvements that can be made and need to be made.
Yeah, Marek Dolezal can't play 35 minutes and grab one rebound. I don't care if he's playing the Monstars. Like, you have to grab more than a rebound in 35 minutes. But I don't know what the changes are. I'm personally not in love with Jesse as the best option. Now, Frank might actually be the lead option, but it's been reported that he is out for COVID reasons. So, Jesse, I guess, like Boeheim said in the post game that he played Jesse over John because John isn't big enough. Jesse's taller than John, but John's definitely wider than Jesse. Like, Jesse's the skinniest guy on the team. He kind of has the build of like a freshman Dolezal almost. So I don't know if Jesse Edwards can really be the solution. In my mind, he might be the best guy offensively. Hopefully Frank can come back. It's just a tracing thing. And then he makes an impact on the defensive end, because he, to me, seems like the biggest, most athletic, best fit on the defensive end. But it's a problem. I mean, I said when we were doing our lineup predictions a couple episodes ago, wow, this team looks pretty good in the event Bahamas Adibe isn't there. I was dead wrong. Like, I will admit that I was way off, because they look bad. And frankly, there's two guys on this team that we've said have been consistent all year, Quincy and Marek. Marek has a bad game against UNC. Syracuse loses. Quincy has a bad game against Pittsburgh. He was more in actual foul trouble, whereas Marek was in some sort of manifested foul trouble. But both of those guys, I would say their performances have somewhat been the difference in losing both these games so far.
They've been in weird games, like, and you know, the narratives that we thought we sort of had figured out and set in stone have just sort of been shifted a little bit. And so I want to revert back and sort of, you know, re-hit on that discussion. And to put you on the spot, because we didn't necessarily have this planned, has your starting five changed with the return of Bahama, or does it stay the same? I know, like, we're obviously, you know, we're moving on, and this is maybe a discussion that should be altered to, is there a starting five change that you really want to see with regards to right now in the current lineup? Because we don't know the timetable for the return of Bahama. What do you sort of want to see out of the lineup right now to hit on this discussion, but maybe in a little bit different of a light?
I don't think it's changed drastically. I think personally, I don't want Joe Girard right now starting for this team if my interest is them winning. So if I'm pretending I'm the coach, I talked to you about it. We were talking about this game and the UNC game, and we were talking about Dolezal, and I mentioned I thought Joe didn't have a great game, and you said you thought he was okay, and I said, well, he scored 6 points. Do we not expect him to score more than six? And you said, which, honest, it's your opinion, said, no, I don't expect him to score more than 6 points. And frankly, if Joe Girard can't score more than 6 points in a game, or if we're not even expecting him to get up to double digits, then what is he doing in the game? Because on almost every other facet than shooting, he's a liability in comparison to Kadari Richmond. Richmond's a better defensive player. I'd argue he's been a better passer so far this season. He can drive and get fouled more. Obviously, going back to defense, he steals the ball like crazy. So I don't really understand what Joe Girard's doing right now to hold his minutes. I mean, he's losing them. He only played 26 minutes against UNC. Richmond played 16. But I'd love to see an even 20-20 almost from them as we get on to this Pitt game and over to Miami as well, because Kadari offers a lot outside of scoring. Joe really doesn't. He's kind of a negative outside of everything other than his ability to shoot the ball, which has also been a negative so far this year.
I think we're sort of approaching that limbo and that 2020 idea that you and a lot of other people, and even I have nothing against that 2020 aspect of things. Like, if I think, and that's sort of where things need to fall. I do want to sort of, you know, I'll hit on Joe in a second, but I want to sort of holler at Jim for a second, not that he might be listening, but I do think that there needs to be an eyeglass on Buddy. Because I watched, and I mean, he played a lights out first half against North Carolina, 18 points. And it was great. It was beautiful. But in the second half, he changed and something shifted, and it was a bit of a UNC shift. It was also a bit of a Buddy shift. It was both parts sort of had their own shift, and Buddy gets skunked in the second half. I would have preferred to see Joe and Kadari in there down the stretch. And I think that that's an option that no one even would consider. But I think that you sort of have to approach this as three guys, and I know they're not equal, but I want this to sort of be approached as three equals. And obviously in three equals where you're not bringing hindsight into things, or not, you can bring hindsight into it, but you're not sort of bringing in these preconceived notions. I want you to start Joe and Buddy, and I want you to play who deserves the minutes outside of the first five. Outside of the first five, if Joe looks bad, take him out. If Buddy looks bad, take him out. And then you keep them in until someone needs a rest, or until, you know, someone makes a mistake or has lost the hot hand or is losing things and needs to regain control. I think that needs to be a rotation that is strictly based on what is happening right now. And in the first half, Buddy deserved the minutes, and Joe and Kadari, I argue Kadari should have gotten more first half minutes than he ended up getting. But in the second half, I think Kadari should have been coming in for Buddy, because Buddy could not even get open, let alone hit a shot when he was open. And I think Joe was 2 for 2 shooting in the second half from deep. I didn't think he took – there was one shot early on that I really hated. It was a bit of a chuck, but I don't think he was really chucking in this game. I think he played smart, and then obviously at the end there was – a layup that he should have hit and missed, but at the end of the day, they lost by 5, and that layup was by no means the difference. I thought Joe played a sound game, and that's sort of what you want and what I expect out of him, and that's where I said that this is what I want out of Joe. I think he played a simple game. He didn't try to force anything, which he had been doing a lot this year, and he took the shots that were there, which I think is what you want from Joe. I don't want Joe in as a scorer. And to your point, I mean, you made a great point at that aspect. What does Joe provide outside of scoring? And some games that is nothing. I think he held his own much better defensively against Carolina, albeit this is not a Carolina team that really works to move the guards too much. And the guards sort of shoot when they're open, but that is by no means how this offense runs. But I was really pleased with the way Joe played. And I think he deserved the 26 minutes. What I think that minutes distribution should have been is Girard at 26, Boeheim at 35, or at 33, and Kadri at 21, which is just about as equal as it's going to get in an ACC game without saying that I'm going to clock you out to get even minutes. I think there should have been a 5-minute stretch in the second half where Buddy sat on the bench, because to be quite honest, there was a big change. He was stagnant. Carolina was coming above screens and limited his shots. And I think he had two or three pretty open threes in the second half that he needs to make. And I don't care what he did in the first half, because he played a great first half, but you've got to be able to play a complete game. And if you can't, then that's another problem that Syracuse has. It's not just Buddy, it's the team as a whole. You've got to play a complete game in order to win conference games.
And the two guards just really haven't played many complete games this year. Buddy, it's funny, if he scores 9 in the first half and 9 in the second half, I think both of us would be sitting here saying that was a solid game. But he went crazy in the first half, and all he had to do was not completely disappear into thin air. And he completely disappeared into thin air. And Joe did hit two big shots in the second half. He really didn't do much at all in the first half. It's just, you know, I sent this to you too in our text messages. The expectations, I think, of this team have changed so much. The expectations have changed so much because when Joe and Buddy came into the year, I think we both thought of them as double-digit average scorers, probably up in the 14 to 15 range potentially. And now neither of us expected Quincy to be the team's leading scorer, so that takes some points away from them. But they haven't been consistent offensive weapons. And if they're not consistent offensive weapons, Quincy and more recently Allen are the only two guys that can really score. And that's just not going to work. Like, when Sidibe comes back, as great as he was during the end of last season, he's not going to inject this huge flurry of offense into Syracuse that's going to completely change how they're playing in the front court. Joe or Buddy, they have to start hitting shots. And I do think that lineup that you proposed of Kadri and Joe, we saw it when Buddy was out. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, Joe is really more of a two guard. If you think about the way he plays, he can pass. He had a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio last season. He's not by any means a bad passer, but he's definitely looking for his own shot first. He just happens to be around 6 feet tall, so he's given the ball to carry it up. But Kadri could feed Joe a little bit more. And I think that maybe if Joe's, I don't know if it's pressure or something that's kept him from living up to what he had in his freshman season, but maybe it relieves some of the pressure if he doesn't have to worry about all the playmaking and is instead just worried about getting his own shot up like Buddy is.
I think it's a big point in a conversation that I want to get more traction, and I want to start seeing more, because I do think that that's a look that would bring a lot of value and versatility to Syracuse. And unfortunately, you know, you mentioned that, well, Buddy was out, there was a chance for this, and Kadri was running the point and Joe was running the two. And unfortunately, you know, Joe has probably one of the coldest stretches of his career in terms of 3-point shooting. I think that's something that could be fixed. And I think it has sort of leveled itself out, and you sort of come back to more reasonable numbers. And I think that's something that I would love to see them return to for a little bit. And I know Buddy is the premier 3-point shooter on this team, and I'm not trying to say that he isn't, but I also understand that when you have a hot hand, you have a hot hand, and when you have a cold hand, you have a cold hand. And I know you've got to shoot to get out of a cold slump, but I think that there is definitely something to be said about when there is a cold slump out of Buddy, you can run this Joe and Kadri look, with Kadri at the one, Joe at the two, and letting Joe be a spot up shooter, because he was getting shots. He was getting shots during that stretch with Buddy out. Unfortunately for Syracuse, unfortunately for Joe, unfortunately for this Kadri-Joe combo that we would love to see a little bit more of, Joe was ice cold. That's not something that's going to happen. That's something that Joe will be able to hit at a higher clip, and something that could turn into a different look for Syracuse if they do need to go in that route, which I can't imagine Buddy will play. What do they have left? You know, 15 games left, maybe? 15 games left. Is Buddy going to play 30 perfect halves?
where you don't want him to sit 1 minute? No. Let's mix this in a little bit and see where it takes Syracuse.
So we got to get to the inevitable now, which is the Pitt Panthers. And I don't think either of us are super interested in doing another in-depth breakdown. You know, we talked to Craig Meyer. If you want to hear about Pitt, go check out our last episode. But we should talk about, you know, what does Syracuse do differently? Now, in the last matchup, Quincy Guerrier plays 17 minutes because he's picks up four fouls crazy early. Should have been pulled earlier when he had three fouls, but that's besides the point. So you assume he's going to play more. That gives Syracuse a bump in rebounding and points. Joe and Buddy scored 16 points in 64 minutes combined. In my mind, that's got to be different. Kadari didn't even have a great game, but like I said, and I'll say again, he does so much for you outside of offense. And he's a better rebounder than both those guys because, A, he's taller and he's longer, and I think he's quicker than Buddy at least. So he's going to get to those long rebounds more often. So I'm looking for Kadari, who had 19 against Pitt last time, to maybe get up into that 25-minute range, because I really think that Joe just wasn't able to have a ton of success in this Pitt game last time, and I don't know how much more he has in this one, but what changes are you looking for as Syracuse and Pitt clash for the second time in, what, 10 days? Yeah, 10 days.
Well, I want to add to that situation. You talk about Joe and Buddy combined for 16 in 64. Let me throw in, and I know Quincy had the bad game, but Quincy is, you know, three, you'll throw Quincy into that mix. That's three starters combining for 81 minutes, combining for 19 points. That's not going to be something that is a winning formula, and it's not going to be something that you commonly see out of those three. But that was the situation, and that is probably the big reason Syracuse loses that and the rebounding margin against a team that really isn't that great of a rebounding team and that big of a team on their own. The big change that I sort of want to see in this game has to do with the rebounding, and it's a bit of a cop-out because that's sort of the situation here, and they, you know, they lose two games where they get absolutely ruined on the rebounding margin, but you've got to be able to step things up. You've got to be able to step things up. You look at Pitt, they're a good offensive rebounding team. Why? Because they played Syracuse, I'll be honest. They're a good offensive rebounding team, though. They're able to get the offensive boards. The key for this for Syracuse and the key to get that blowout win that they should have and they need to have and they should get is for them to do what they need to do on the boards. They've got to be able to crash the boards as a group. I don't care if you sacrifice a little bit in the transition game. I'm okay with that. I am okay if you sacrifice in the transition game. You need all five of your players on the court, regardless of who they are. Whether it's Joe, whether it's Kadari out there in terms of your guard size, you need them to be crashing the boards. I thought Joe did a decent job against Carolina rebounding. A couple of times I thought he was able to get those long rebounds, and you know, it is what it is. They still get ruined on the offensive rebounding aspect of things, but you've got to have your guards crashing the boards and you need your bigs to be able to crash better. A couple of times Allen looked a little bit reckless crashing the boards against UNC, just sort of jumping into oblivion. And I think he kicked Quincy in the groin while trying to do that as the shot clock expired. Just chaos. Be a little more in control. And I know Allen is a great rebounder for his size and his position, but I want a little bit more control and a little bit more, you know, awareness out of Marek, because one of the big reasons that Marek was getting smashed on the boards is because he was coming up towards the foul line with one of the bigs, and Carolina has another big down low. And as Marek crashes, the other big has him in unreal position already. It's a great strategy by Carolina, but it's a strategy that not that many people are going to be able to pull off because of the size required. So I will say that they're going to be able to make this rebounding switch, but they need to be able to make that switch consistently and be able to crash the boards as a unit and get a body. It's such a simple sort of the start of you figuring out how to rebound. You've got to get a body. You can't be ball watching. And if you get caught ball watching, That's when you give up offensive rebounds more than you should when you give in the 2-3 zone situation.
I got to bring up one more elephant in the room. I'm a Liverpool soccer fan, so I like Bobby Firmino. I'm a Green Bay Packers fan, so I like Big Bob Tonyan. There might be a third Bobby here that I'm starting to like in Bobby Braz, but I'm going to be a little skeptical. Bobby's hit a three in two games this season, and then every other game, he's just not shown up. If Bobby is real, it's huge for Syracuse because the three-point shooting of Joe has completely bottomed out to start the year percentage-wise. Do you believe in 4-for-5 from three Bobby at one point, the leading scorer of the game, or large sample size Bobby, which is comes off the bench, misses two threes, goes back to the bench?
Let me cop out here and say he's in the middle because he really is. I don't think that he is, what was it, 0-for-12 Bobby to start the year or something like that. And he's not 4-for-5 Bobby either, but he is an option that can come in there and play and shoot a 30 to 40% clip from three. And I don't think that's a big ask because that's what we've been told he does in practice day in and day out. And I get practice is different from games. But I have seen some splashes of Bobby in terms of the rebounding and his athleticism and his, you know, high school high jumping miraculousness that you saw in that unreal block the other day. He's got a lot to offer. And I think he's still trying to find his way and find his positioning. I mean, to go back to our rebounding talk, he is the key because I think that, you know, you've got to be able to have an option to be playing. And without Woody, I don't know what's going on with Woody, but with Woody not playing and Braswell in there, Braswell has to show that whether he's in there for Allen, whether he's in there for Quincy, whether he's in there for whatever reason. But when he is in the game, when Braswell is in the game, he is playing at the bottom of the zone and he's not playing at the five. He's got to get better at crashing those boards and getting those rebounds because that is going to be vital to be able to say, hey, you know, Allen looks lost defensively. Let's give Braswell some minutes. If he can show, that is going to be, you know, the same conversation we had at the guard spot. That's going to be what they need. They need Braswell to be able to figure this out a little bit in the rebounding game, and the shooting will come. The shooting will figure itself out. But if he can jump up in the rebounding game, that'll pay dividends for the Orange in the remainder of the season. I want to get sort of, you know, one last take, one last thought. Pitt hasn't played. Pitt has played. The last time they hit the court was the Syracuse Pitt game inside the dome. And now it's rematch time and it's going to be that same game. And Pitt, they've got the win under their belt. What else do they have to lose? They lost their best player for this season. All right. A lot of people wrote them off. I wrote them off, not to say that they're going to turn around and become a tournament team and turn around and play an unreal season, but for what it's worth, Pitt's 6-2 on the season. They're 6-2 on the season, and they got a chance to beat Syracuse and get a clean sweep against a team that they should have no business being able to pull off a clean sweep. So what do you sort of bring of this situation? Where does Syracuse fall here? And I think we're both on the same page that they should get the win, but what is sort of your closing thought with regards to this?
Well, I'm not going to give you my predictions exactly because I want to save that for the Twitter. But I'll say my predictions are going to skew in the favor of Syracuse. I think it's a bounce back game. I think as we talked about with Craig Meyer, and we were a little pessimistic today, but we both wholeheartedly believe Syracuse is a more talented team than Pittsburgh, especially without Justin Champagny. And frankly, if they lose this game, pack up for the NIT. That's definitely not going to happen because of COVID, because I think Joe Lunardi just released his latest bracketology. I think he had Syracuse as the last team in. I haven't checked though, so don't crucify me if I'm wrong there, but we don't even know if this is going to be a 68 team tournament or not. And I mean, Syracuse can't afford to drop this game. So I think with the backs against the wall, the Orange will have a strong performance.
And the season is far from over, despite me saying it was like an absolute crisis and it was DEFCON 5 or whatever when they lost these two games. But SU needs to get playing better, and they need to right now. I think they got to blow out Pittsburgh. And frankly, while we won't get too far ahead of ourselves, they should probably blow out the Hurricanes of Miami as well. Because if this team wants to get to the tournament, they should beat teams that aren't going to get to the tournament. And Pittsburgh has looked good, but I don't think they're going to get to the tournament. So Syracuse didn't do it at home. They got to do it on the road. And at least even this series, that really should have been a 2-0 from the start.
Yeah, they've got to get this win. They've got to get themselves back on the right track. Because right now, to toss a Mario Kart reference out there, you've got the little guy in the floating cloud holding the wrong way sign right in front of you. You got to turn things around and you've got to get back on the road if you want any chance of being able to climb back into pole position or any sort of proper positioning going down through the rest of the ACC slate. Syracuse, Pittsburgh coming up on Saturday, 12 p.m. game, 11:30 countdown to tip off on WAER, 88.3 FM in Central New York. Or WAER.org to stream. Or you know what? Grab the WAER app, stream it from there. Do whatever you need. A lot of good content there, taking you until 4 p.m. with the conclusion of our coverage in the double overtime. You've got some follows to dish out. I know you want to, at Ben Shulman 7, at O'Valentine 14, at Ostrom Avenue Pod. The predictions are heating up. Owen and we had a bit of a tie, another tie here. So that's back-to-back ties. And we've got some gaps here. I still hold a narrow lead on Ben, but I do not feel safe. I do not feel safe right now. Ben is lurking and he's made some good picks in the last game or two. So, something to keep an eye out. And, you know, I've got nothing against you guys replying with who's wrong, who's right, where you sit in terms of the prediction. So at Ostrom Avenue Pod over on Twitter, and give us a subscription wherever you get your podcast, wherever you're listening to us from. We'd love for you to give us a subscription. We'd love for you to write us a review, give us a rating. It goes a very, very long way. It's been a fun episode, a different episode, more of just, you know, we called it this a couple of weeks ago when we did it, but another one of the State of the Orange type episodes right here, sort of just laying everything down. This is where things stand. This is what needs to happen. This is where we don't even know what should happen. And it's sometimes just what you need to do. And they're the conversations that everyone's having surrounding the program right now. They got to get themselves back on the right track against Pittsburgh this weekend. Until then, stay safe. This has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. For Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. We'll catch you next week.